Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the face-off to my leather face, it's Dan. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
Face off. I'm doing pretty good.
Are you quoting Nick Cage from that movie, or are you just having fun with the phrase?
Oh, definitely.
In case there's any kids out there who don't know what movie we're talking about, that's the fine and crazy John Woo film from the 90s, Face Off, where John Travolta and Nick Cage essentially trade faces. many years before the actual first face transplant surgery happened, which actually did happen a few years back, although I remember seeing the pictures of the person, and they didn't look much better than Mason Verger does right now. I would say I'm not sure how successful that surgery really was. So obviously, since I mentioned our friend Mason, we are here once again to talk about Hannibal and the latest episode, which was, if I recall, Digestivo, correct? That was the I don't actually have any news that's happened this week, which is good because usually the news has been bad every time. Yeah. So I will go with the no news is good news as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, other than them moving the show from Thursday to Saturday, which is makes things a little more complicated for us to record sometimes. But I guess we've both been busy enough lately where we still find a way.
Yeah, it's for me, it's kind of a blessing and a curse because, it on the other hand, it gives me a little bit more time to work on my notes on the episode because it's on over the weekend as opposed to during the week when I'd be, when I was working, but we don't want to get into personal life crap once again. But now that, actually for me, now that Hell on Wheels is back, now suddenly like Saturday night is stacked. I've got like two great dramas, back to back. I'm like, oh, I don't mind being home now on a Saturday night. That's so sad.
Well, it is what it is. At least there's one bright spot for you.
There you go. But back to the episode, which we're going to be talking about tonight. Let me say, before we get into, the overall recap and such, I'm just happy that we've essentially concluded the storyline of the first half of the season, because all I know is that, much like yourself, I'm a huge fan of this show, but if it's starting to test my patience as far as how long this has been taking, it starts to become a little wonder why... some people out there are kind of going, enough already. Maybe it's maybe you deserve to be canceled or what have you. I really feel this half of the season should have been told in half as much time. I feel they stretched things out a little bit needlessly and they got a little bit too self-indulgent. When I realized if you add up what happened over the course of 7 episodes, not that much happened. Especially when you compare it to the first 2 seasons.
Right, yeah.
But, that doesn't mean there wasn't stuff I didn't love, and I did like some of these episodes. I'm not going to be negative about it, but I'm happy it's over, and I'm really looking forward to this final run and where we believe that they're going, even though it makes me sad that might be the end of the show overall.
Right. So were you satisfied with this episode in general?
I was. I really enjoyed this episode. Were there a few things that were maybe just a little bit out there? Yeah, but it didn't bother me. I don't feel this show has really been grounded in any strong sense of reality from the get-go. So I could question certain things, but I may do so jokingly during our recap. But it doesn't bother me the way it would on a show like, if I'm watching like say The Wire and something just comes out of left field, like a certain plot line in the final season of The Wire, I question it because I don't believe it would happen. A show like this where, especially this season where it seems like half the show is told like a surreal dream of some kind, I'm not going to get too hung up on, wait, really? You had a baby growing in a pig? Is that possible? Has that actually been done? Because I haven't heard about that. Who's running these procedures? You know, what is Oscar Mayer doing that I don't know about? I do have a few other things to say, but I may wait until after we finish talking about the episode. The few thoughts I have on the show that I got after having a conversation with my best friend about the show, and it was one of those, my initial disagreeing with her, and then giving it a little bit of thought and realizing, oh, you know what? I kind of see her point to a certain extent.
Man, you just don't agree with her too much. You don't want to give her a big head or anything, so.
Oh, no, she won't get that. You know, she's grounded in reality, unlike myself.
Yeah, she's very lovable like me, so.
Yes, I guess I would put it that way. She's actually going to listen to this podcast, and I will say her by name. I'll wait for later. She probably already knows I'm talking about her. She's probably already, and I guarantee her eyes are rolling, going, all right, get on with it. You're going to do another 2-hour podcast? This is why I don't listen to you. So, with that imaginary diatribe out of the way, I guess I can get to the episode, which again was Digestivo. I think it's pretty obvious what the title means. You know, it's got digest in the title, so figure it out. So we open. We're back at the end of the previous episode. Not quite at the end. We're at the moment where Hannibal is starting to cut through Will's head, and we, at the same time as this is happening, we cross cut to, I guess, the Polizia, which are led by that douchey guy again. They're storming Hannibal's lair, you know, and we can even hear the sound of the buzzsaw cutting into Will's head while they're doing this. And then there's that one moment when we're in the, I guess we'll call it the Lecter dining room, where we get that little POV from Will, where everything is like extremely distorted and warped. I like that Jack across the table, he kind of looked like a cross between the Hunchback of Notre Dame, as if, you know, Picasso had drawn him or something. And yay, we get to see Lecter as that half man, half stag thing again.
I always like that, you know, when they do these, like, you know, over the top touches like that. That's definitely the one that's like, you know, I've pretty much always been okay with that, so.
I don't have a problem with it. I mean, sometimes I mock with hate, and sometimes I mock with love. This would be mocking with love. Later on, there might be some hate mocking later on. I don't know.
if they have the red dragon eating snails, I guess there'll be some hate mocking going on there.
They'll just be hate. Some hate. So then the police come in, and one of them knocks Hannibal unconscious. And although Will very clearly has this horrific deep cut going across his head, you know, which means it might have even gone into his skull for all we know, you know, they just put a bag over his head like they're going to do their business with him or something. I was like, wow, no medical treatment. Nice. Apparently, it sounds like Verger had a price on Will's head as well. And the only guy in the room who doesn't have a bounty on their head is Jack. But El Duce, or El Duce over here, I guess to cover their tracks, he decides that Jack's going to have to bite the dust as well. I was trying to figure out if all these guys were all members of the police force, or maybe they were just hired goons by this cop or not. I wasn't really clear on that. If they're all cops, that means like pretty much the entire Italian police force is made up of psychos. And are very easily bought, apparently.
Yeah, so, if their go-to method for, like, silencing Jack is just, like, cutting his head open just because they, like, watched Hannibal do it 5 seconds before, and they're all carrying guns, so, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to do to Jack what Hannibal was going to do to Will, you know, cut his head open, and you know, that way they could cover it up. It was very, very strange. Huh. However, in this one moment, that head douche kind of won me over. Not just because I can always appreciate a good corrupt cop, you know, how many years did I watch The Shield? But when they're talking about the bullshit story they're going to put out about Lecter narrowly escaping them, I was so thrilled. The guy actually quotes Maxwell Smart when he says, missed him by that much. I was going to send you a clip to put into our podcast, to put here, but I decided not to. So you guys will all have to imagine that. So anyway, the douchey guy leaves, and he leaves two of his men to kill Jack. But next thing you know, they're both shot sniper style by, you know, obviously it must be Chio, who drops in minutes later. And Jack essentially agrees to tell her exactly where Will and Hannibal have been taken if she'll just take that needle out of his neck. And I guess the IV drip that was there was some sort of a paralytic agent that was keeping him immobile. That was my impression, I guess. Right.
Yep.
So he tells her about Muskrat Farm. She removes the needle. And, oh, for some reason, she also leaves one of the dead henchmen's guns by Jack. You know, because, of course, he wouldn't have thought to get a gun himself since he was no longer asleep. But you know, I started measuring, well, maybe his body will start to come to, you know, from the neck down in case someone comes into the room and his arms are free, he can shoot the guy or something. I don't know. It seemed like a strange move to make, but whatever. So after the always fun opening credit sequence, you know, splashy, blood splashy, we see that Margo is continuing to sleep with Alana in that, you know, what the heck ever led Alana down this path again relationship. But Margo gets a call and she tells Alana that they have Hannibal and Will. Now, Alana, I think her sense of empathy, I think has joined her heterosexuality on hiatus at this point. She points out that Margo's brother is a sadist and he's going to want to torture them for a while before he gets around to killing them, which means that these two ladies have time to put their, I would say, as of yet unrevealed plan into action. So outside the Verger estate, we, you know, after watching those trucks with their precious, at least to him, cargo come in, we finally pick up where we left off in the previous episode, where Mason is saying, you know, I'm going to resist the temptation to do the impression here. Welcome to Muskrat Farm. It was really bizarre that, because Will is still so out of it, you know, the whole time. You know, so I don't know if he knows where he is or what's happening. I think he actually had a stupid grin on his face at one point. I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's from loss of blood and he can't really think straight, perhaps. I don't know. Hannibal here does note that Mason could have just had his people assassinate him while he was in Italy. But Verger points out that, you know, what would be the fun in that? And then he uses his father's old switchblade to, I guess, to check the fat on Lecter, as he used to do with pigs, because what you do, you stick it in their back to check the depth of their fat. Interesting that Lecter does not even react to having a knife, you know, stuck in him. At least it looked like a good inch and a half to 2 inches worth of blood on that knife. After that, we see that Will and Lecter are wheeled into yet another room, where, and there they are also chained. And that's when Mason is also, he's speaking really adoringly of swine fairs. And for some reason, he feels a need to kind of try to throw a scare into Will, who still seems kind of out of it, you know, saying how tusked beasts instinctively disembowel. But Lecter is clearly his prize pig in this moment. And he's the one that he's promising to have good, funny times with. I like good, funny times. It's like our podcasts are good, funny times. Later, pretty much seconds after, you know, Mason has told Alana that Jack Crawford appears to have been Lecter's final victim, Margo pops right in to say those rumors are untrue, that Crawford is in fact alive. I was thinking maybe this is one of those Twitter hoaxes, the ones that always say, like, Jeff Goldblum has died and turns out he's alive and stuff. But Mason apparently did plan ahead, because it sounds like he had placed a number of calls way back when to the authorities, to the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, basically lodging all these complaints that Jack Crawford has been harassing him, making weird, incoherent phone calls in the middle of the night. I was like, what? Weird, incoherent phone calls? Is Jack doing an impression of Mason? Or maybe Lecter, for that matter. Anyway, although we all know Jack didn't do that, apparently there's no way Jack can't prove that he didn't. Although, you know, phone records, but I guess, you know, maybe they say he had a burner phone or something. I don't know. Mason's being all sly and crafty here, I guess. But Alana points out there's someone else in this on this estate who's really the cleverest one of them all, Lecter. And he actually warns him, you know, if you play with your food, you're giving it the opportunity to bite back. So at this point, you were pretty much on board and enjoying the episode, I'm guessing, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was definitely, you know, the pacing is so much different than what we've had earlier. And for the most part, there wasn't anything lame going on. So even Shio's, Shio Ex Machina murdering everybody from afar, the episode was just like, okay, you know, whatever. It's cool enough.
Yes, I was probably most pro Chio in this episode than I was for any other episode. I had actually no problems with her. Although, yeah, she kind of functions more as a plot device than anything else, or a convenience for that matter. But
I wonder, you know, just while we were talking, I wonder if Alana's banging Margot just like because Hannibal was, you know, banging her just to use against Will. I wonder if like that was if that's her motivation for doing it, just doing that to get inside her head to, you know, use her against her brother.
It's possible.
It's a stretch, but
I don't know. I could try to. It's one of those. Do I try to explain away why Alana went along with this, or Maybe Alana's just in a different place now in her life, and she's opening herself up to other opportunities. And, I just got annoyed in the previous week. I just felt that sequence went on too long. But maybe it's one of those things. Sorry.
Well, just like the fact that they skipped that sequence this week was, you know, pretty good. I'm just like, oh, they did that again, but we don't have to see it, just whatever ridiculous way they want to show it, so.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't have a problem with such a scene. I mean, I certainly got treated to a bunch of really good ones in this past season of Orange is the New Black, but I just found it rather annoying in this television series. Anyway, let's get back to the episode. So we then see Mason, and it looks like he's getting ready for the prom. No, I'm kidding. He's actually getting ready for his own dinner party. And I notice that everyone is dressed up really super stylish and spiffy. You know, like it was like a photo shoot for GQ or something. I was wondering if Cordell actually dressed all three of them. I guess he had to, because I don't think Will or Hannibal are going to be allowed to dress themselves, or I don't even know if Will is able to, quite frankly, so. Cordell is a man of many talents, clearly. So while they're at this dinner, Hannibal seems to be trying to get under Mason's skin, or whatever's left of it, by comparing him to the biblical figure Jezebel, who herself was actually eaten by dogs, which then reminded me, oh yeah, Mason's face, didn't he fed it to Will's dogs, even though he ate his own nose? I kind of forgot about that aspect. But that does not faze Verger at all. In fact, it actually gives him the opportunity to note that he's all right with the risen Jesus, or as he likes to refer to Christ, the Riz. Did he say nobody beats the Riz in a previous episode? I feel like he did. I'm going to miss Mason. But unlike Jezebel, that's how he got a new face. And speaking of new faces, I think this is when we find out the plan. The plan is that Cordell is going to cut off Will's face. And, you know, Mason is going to make, like, as we said earlier, he's going to make like Nick Cage and wear it while he's eating Hannibal. I was like, okay. What happened to the old, I'm going to feed him to the pigs idea? He's kind of gone way beyond the deep end with his plans now. But possibly one of my favorite moments in the episode comes up now. Huh. Oh boy, let me wet my lips a little bit. I may take a shot at doing my Mason here. Hold on one second. It's the joke or the story that Mason tells. when he compares Will and Hannibal to? The German cannibal who advertised for a friend and ate him and his penis before he died. Tragedy being the penis was overcooked. Go to all that trouble to eat a friend and then you overcook his penis. They ate it anyway. They had to. They committed. But they didn't enjoy it. But I'm committed to enjoying every bite of you. Come on, that made the podcast worthwhile, didn't it? As much as I enjoyed that, Lecter is clearly amused. I actually thought for a moment that the actor was actually going to crack up during the scene. This is another one of those, there have to be bloopers somewhere. I want this. I mean, am I crazy? And throughout this episode, this seems to be the episode where Mads Mikkelsen seems to be having a lot of fun, even though he's constantly bound and being held against his will, but he's smirking quite a bit in this episode. Anyway, he's also, seems like he's a little impressed, you know, especially with Cordell, because Cordell starts describing how he's first going to prepare Hannibal's hands and feet on a, I think what he calls a Promethean barbecue. I started thinking, Cordell would actually have been a good manservant for Hannibal. He seems to really be, you know, on the same page as him. But Cordell isn't beaming so much about a minute later when Will takes a big old chomp out of his cheek before Cordell can apply moisturizer to his Mason's future face mask there. Oh, by the way, in this entire scene where they're talking about, you know, everything from pigs and cannibals and penises and face removals, I'm going to say it's Mason's talk of a future pajama party with Lecter in their shorties, which is probably the most disturbing thing mentioned here. Because I was like, wait, what? I don't know where you're going with... Wait, I think I do know where you're going. What? I don't want to see Mason Verger in his underwear. I don't. Unless he puts that mask on. Anyway, so later on, after sewing up that bite on his face, Cordell brands Hannibal with what I assume is probably the Muskrat Farms, you know, their own sizzling seal of approval there. Then they engage in a little bit of, let's call it lighthearted conversation, pretty much about how Cordell is going to cut and cook the different parts of Hannibal every day for Mason. Then there's that moment when he kind of looks down in a certain area and leeringly says, you know, he's saving the best parts for last. What? And I was thinking, yeah, I know we just heard the thing about shorties, but I'm thinking maybe Cordell might not quite be on the same page as his boss, because later we see Verger saying maybe he'll feed Lecter's genitals to his eel, you know, the one that swims in that floor tank, you know, in his bedroom. I don't know. There's a whole lot of weird phallic stuff going on in this episode. I neglected to mention before because I was too busy, you know, doing the Mason voice, that when I noticed at the moment he mentions penis is when a big plate of sausages is put on the table. we got no snails this week, but we do get a close up of sausage while he's talking about penis. So, you know, Brian Fuller, I kept thinking, did he get the notice that they were being canceled before he filmed this episode? Because that was kind of like, oh, what the fuck, kind of a thing. Anyway, Mason is talking to Margo, and he indicates that he knows all about her relationship with Alana. And at this point, he actually brings up Alana's viability to carry, you know, the Verger child, as he assumes that she's had the chance to check under the hood by now. I was going to do that. I stopped. But this is what I thought was a very significant moment for really hardcore fans of the books and especially the movies of the Hannibal Lecter series. When he asks if the uterus is intact, and he says, are the hips childbearing, roomy? And I went, oh, you know what you just did? You just referenced Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the Lambs when he's asking about Buffalo Bills victims, and I think he's referring to specifically Miss Virginia, and he refers to her as being, was she big through the hips? Roomy? And they both did the same kind of inflection on Roomy. So that's not an accent. That's definitely there on purpose. So tip of the hat. I enjoyed that very much. But it turns out that Mason has a bigger surprise for Margot beyond his knowledge of her illicit relationship. Because it turns out he's already got a surrogate picked out for her, and that he had harvested Margot's eggs when he was having her, you know, insides cut out. So that's exciting. And, you know, when Margot learns that the surrogate's on the farm, you know, of course, she wants to meet the surrogate, but Mason doesn't think she's quite ready for that. I kid you not, because I'm writing notes as I'm watching this. I actually wrote, good Lord, don't let it be a giant pig. Well, guess what? Anyway, later we see Alana sitting down to talk to a somewhat surprised Will, who is getting... he gets really judgy on Alana here. You know, he's disappointed in her, you know, but the fact that she's, you know, not upholding the law, and I'm like going, Will, are you kidding me? You know, are we dealing with a pot kettle black kind of a situation here? Because, you know, you're the guy who's been talking about running away with Hannibal. You haven't exactly been Mr., you know, you haven't been exactly the guy in The Fugitive, you know, pursuing your man here. Let's put it that way. I was drawing a blank on the name of the character who pursues the guy in The Fugitive, so I kind of screwed that part up.
Richard Kimball.
Well, Richard Kimball's The Fugitive, but... oh, Gerard. Inspector Gerard. Oh. That's the name.
I thought you were talking about who... well, yeah, I thought you were talking about, you know, because The Fugitive himself is pursuing somebody, too, so... at least in the movie.
Oh, yeah, because he's pursuing the one on Red. Oh, he's doing that on the TV show, too. Great TV show. People should watch it. Why am I talking about that? Anyway, back to this. we find out that Alana, her plan was when she joined up with Mason, that she kind of thought that Jack Crawford and the FBI would come swooping in for the rescue. But as she says, things evolved. And with that observation, Will kind of tells her, well, now you have to evolve, and you're going to have to spill some blood, either by your own hand or someone else's. It's kind of interesting they keep using the word evolve, because most civilizations, we wouldn't say violence is a sign of evolution, but I guess they're just using the word to mean change, so it's fine. A little later, we see that apparently all those Italians are still on the Verger payroll, because, you know, they're on the farm, they're guarding the room where Lecter and the pigs are being kept. Again, I was wondering if these guys were just thugs or mercenaries, or are these members of the Italian police force? I don't even know. I know it doesn't matter.
I suppose they could just be Verger's guys that he sent to, you know, scoop up Hannibal once he had a solid lead into where he was.
Right. I mean, but they do seem to be, I maybe I'm just judging them by the way they look. So they're supposed to be Italian. Because I think there is some Italian going on here. So I kept thinking, wow, these guys, it's like the worst promotion for Italy since like either Mussolini or maybe Roberto Benigni or something like that. But we see Margot visits Hannibal, who is now, he's on his knees, he's all trussed up. And we see he starts to sow those seeds that he planted when he was her therapist about the fact that she needs to kill her brother. And he tells her that he could take the blame, you know, because what's one more murder on his rather huge murder resume, quite frankly. Then Alana shows up and shoots the guard. Okay. And I'm pretty sure it's a gun, that she didn't somehow get some dart gun, which where would that even exist anyway? Okay, I gotta put the episode on pause for a second. I'm like, wait, Alana, it's okay for you to kill this total stranger, but you can't really seem to kill anybody else, like, say, Hannibal or Mason or Cordell or anyone that actually matters? I question that because, you know, a few moments later, she says that, you know, Hannibal is the only one that can save Will. And I'm like, no, couldn't you just walk into the operating room and go, you know, pachu, pachu, pachu? You know? You've got the gun. Why? Why do you need Hannibal to do this? Because you're gimping around? I think you can get around. I don't know. Maybe she's just worried about she wouldn't get away with it or something. I don't know. So, but she does make Hannibal promise that he'll save Will. I kind of wondered, hey, does she know that just a couple days ago, Hannibal was in the middle of, you know, cutting Will's head open? Did no one give her that news flash? Okay. And then Hannibal tells her, you know, he promises, and he says that he always keeps his promises. And I was like, whoa. Didn't you promise to kill her? Or at least imply that before? Am I forgetting? Why is she okay with this? Oh. Anyway. So instead she cuts one of the ropes that is binding Hannibal and leaves the knife there for him so he could do the rest himself. And then moments later, much like the Jesus that Mason is so fond of, he rises. Just like Easter. So speaking of the Riz, we switch to, I guess, is the operating theater. I'm guessing that's the same place where they carved out Margot's uterus. I didn't really need to say that sentence, except I just like the sentence "carved out Margot's uterus." I don't know why. Because I'm a sick fuck, I guess, like Mason. And Mason, again, with the Jesus, he's asking, well, if he's accepted Jesus before he drifts off from the sedative. Sedatives that it's clear will not be receiving, because Cordell is only going to immobilize him, but he wants to make sure that Will is going to feel every cut as he removes his face. I'm guessing Cordell got the idea to do that based on the fact that Will bit him, because I don't know if he was planning to torture Will like that before that. So I'm thinking, oh, that's a meal Will's really regretting right now. Yes, I know he spit him out. You know, he's a quitter, I guess. So this is also the first time in the episode where I realized, wait, they're actually talking about a legitimate face transplant. I actually thought he was just going to kind of wear his face kind of like a mask, kind of like a leather face kind of a thing. I didn't really think he was actually going to have it surgically attached to his skull. So I was going, wow, there are no words for how crazy Mason Verger is at this point. It's actually maybe gotten even too much for my taste. But then again, I like a show that goes over the top, and that's where they are on this show. I also think it's fascinating that Cordell may be one of the most talented people I've ever seen in my life. I mean, even Lecter has medical training, but I don't know if he could actually perform an actual face transplant, although we do see he's able to do something like that later on.
Yeah, even though Hannibal spent most of the season in Florence, the true Renaissance man is definitely Cordell here.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's definitely come a long way since True Detective. Oh, sorry, it's just the same actor. That's by the way, and during all this, I kept going, hey, when's Chio going to show up here? I keep wondering, where is she? Well, we need her to kind of ruin the scene or something. And then the next few scenes in a row start getting a little bit more, kind of weird. Because the next thing we see Lecter. Now he's dressed and he's spattered with a whole lot of blood. And he's holding what looks like, I didn't know if it was like just a really large claw hammer or maybe possibly a pickaxe or something, but that's also smeared with a lot of blood. So I was assuming that all those Italian imports I was talking about before, they're all swimming in their own ragu right now, pretty much.
Yeah, so, I guess, you know, but there definitely was like, you know, it felt like something was slightly missing there. So, I mean, if he did, you know, go on some kind of rampage against the guys, it would have been, you know, cool to see a little bit of it, but whatever.
Yeah, it'll be on the DVD, perhaps. So then next we see Margot and Alana bursting into what I guess was her bedroom. And then we see, we see this really large pig is on the bed. It's hooked up to all these machines. We see all the pig nipples all in a row. It's really weird. And then we see there's a baby monitor. And you see the sonogram image on the monitor of what is clearly a human fetus, which we then realize is apparently dead inside the pig. Okay, now my memory has blotted out quite a bit of both the book and the movie Hannibal. So I couldn't tell you if anything like this happened originally. I don't think it did, which is fine, but Jesus Christ. Even the Riz is going to be covering his eyes with something like this. What? And then I, again, while I'm watching, like, I wrote, I was like, I didn't want my note to be true. Really, I didn't. And then it gets just even more gross. I'm glad they didn't show us this, because Margo is still insisting that Alana take it out. So poor Alana, who, again, I don't know how much medical training she has, but maybe you don't need to be a doctor to do this. Apparently has to cut open the pig to remove the baby. God. So, well, by the way, I kept thinking at this point in the script, if I was the writer, I don't think I could have resisted saying, and as the blade cuts into Will, we then cut to commercial. Because right when she says take it out, we also see Cordell is about to make his first cut into Will's face. And good Lord, when we come back from commercial, talk about cuts, we get some cross-cutting here where we see what's essentially the removal of that baby from the pig and then the removal of a face that's being attached to Mason. But we're not really clear on what we're seeing, which becomes clear later on. But first, that baby was like the size of a newborn. So I was like, wait, has this baby been gestating inside a pig from the last 7 to 9 months?
That was the impression I got.
And I was like, okay, do they have either Dr. Frankenstein or Dr. Mengele on staff here coming up with these things? Because I don't think that's possible. But okay, you know, maybe Mason belongs on the island of Dr. Moreau. I don't know. So.
Yeah, you know, Cordell set that up too because he's got, you know, all those skills.
Yes, and he's also big with the pigs as well. So then we see Mason awakening in his chair, and you notice he's got his little weirdo mannequin mask on again. But we also see there's something else strange going on with his face, and then we get a little moment that harkens back to, I like to go back to the 1989 Batman when we see the Joker seeing his face in a mirror for the first time. So Mason Verger sees there's a face that's on his skull, but it's not Will's. It apparently looks like it's Cordell's face, and it kind of just slips right off, leaving Mason's face a big bloody smear. Oh, God. Then we briefly see Lecter. Speaking of Frankenstein, he kind of reminded me of Frankenstein's monster, where he's walking, carrying Will's body in his arms in the snow. I was like, wait, where is he taking Will? Although we get the answer to that, a little later. But fortunately for Hannibal, he still has his Japanese guardian angel hiding in the trees, because she shoots a couple goons who apparently he didn't kill. Spring out behind him, I guess. So back to the crazy going-ons in the Verger house. Alana walks into the room to deliver news of Hannibal's escape, and basically to tell him that everyone's dead. And then Margo comes in. She's there to let him know that she found the surrogate. But Mason, he's pretty confident that she can't kill him, because without an heir, all his money is going to go to the Southern Baptist Church. But, okay. Remember when I said the most disquieting thing in the episode was Mason talking about having a pajama party with Hannibal later? That gets surpassed here, where we find out that with Hannibal's help and a cattle prod applied apparently to Mason's prostate gland, they as they put it, they milked him. Oh, God. Which basically means they jerked him off to get a vial of sperm out of him. Okay, his sister jerked him off to get a vial of sperm out of him. Which Alana seems to have, you know, to show. She's quite proud of herself. Okay. I'm not unhappy that they didn't show us that. Although that would have presented an interesting challenge for the director. How do we show this scene? Anyway, Mason starts scrambling for his gun. The next thing you know, he's wrestling with Margot, and the gun fires and shatters the glass of that floor aquarium. He goes into the water, and the ladies hold him under while that giant, eel first nips at him, and then we get what I'll call the most unsexy deep throat scene of all time. The entire eel goes down his throat into his body, and I presume chokes him to death. You know, that was a death scene I don't think I've seen before. It was kind of like the reverse of the scene from the movie Anaconda when John Voight gets swallowed. It's kind of like the opposite of that, I guess. Did you enjoy Mason's final moments there?
That was pretty fucking creepy. I'm not gonna lie, that was really gross, but it was pretty satisfying. And I like when they have the creative skills like that. So
yeah. I did have one regret, though. I mean, what I liked about it was this was certainly a memorable way to go. I don't remember the last time I've seen anyone die by ingesting an entire live eel. But I did feel it was kind of a shame that you had a character like Mason Verger to not give him some really great final words. And I was kind of thinking, especially with all the business in this episode of wearing masks and faces and all that sort of stuff, I kind of wanted to hear Mason Verger say, "And I would have gotten away with it too, if not for you meddling kids." Because isn't that every Scooby-Doo episode where they're wearing different faces and stuff? So basically, Mason Verger would have made a great Scooby-Doo villain. Maybe in a very hard R-rated one, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, and you know, it wasn't too likely they would have actually left a gun on him too. You know, especially if they spent all that time jerking him off. I'm guessing they probably would have, not left him armed. But whatever.
No, actually, you know, I thought of that when I watched the first time, and I went back, and they actually show that he had went to another part of the room and took the gun out of a drawer. So he didn't have it on him at the time. Because I did question that too. So I was willing to let that one go because. I'm not gonna say they would have run around and taken him out of a drawer or something. It wasn't like the pig. Okay, so now we're in the final stretch and we realize that Lecter took Will back to his house, and then I realized, duh, of course that's where he's gonna take him. And I remember going, wait, what happened to the poor dogs? Where are those dogs? Anyway, we finally get a scene between Lecter and Chio talking, and I was amazed that I wasn't annoyed at all. But she does say that she didn't do this for him or even for herself, but she did it for Hannibal's long-dead sister, Misha. And she does ask him if he ate her. And he does say yes, but he didn't kill her. All I'm going to say is I'm assuming anyone who's listening to this podcast has listened to our previous Hannibal podcasts. So I've already told you guys the true and entire backstory of what happened to his sister. So if you don't remember that, I don't know, go back to that podcast. I think it was for Secundo, the third Hannibal episode this season. But back to this scene, Hannibal then says a metaphor that I think Walter White would have appreciated when he says that the most stable elements that appear in the middle of the periodic table, roughly between iron and silver, and between iron and silver, that's what I think is appropriate for you. I think Walter would have appreciated that. Then we see a teacup crashing. I went, no, you guys were doing so well. No, the whole episode, it was kind of like pretty much straightforward. But no, that's it, just the teacup crashes and Will awakens. And he's sitting up in bed as Lecter enters. and sits by his bedside, which kind of sort of looks like a patient laying down to talk to a psychiatrist who's seated nearby, I thought. Hannibal picks up this open notebook, which I thought was kind of confused me a little bit because I did pause the screen. This notebook was filled with all these complex equations that looked kind of like calculus. Definitely more complicated than anything I ever took in high school, like algebra, geometry, or even trig. I wasn't sure what that meant or what the point of that was. I'm feeling I missed something there. Did you know why that was there?
I got nothing. I noticed the same thing too. I did, you know, equations, but as to, you know, maybe that's just how he takes notes. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just I never got the sense at any other previous time that Lecter would even think that way, because he's got more of an artistic mind. I would imagine his own notebook would be filled with sketches, not mathematical equations. Because I was wondering if maybe it was Will's notebook, but then I was like, why would Will have a notebook like that? Anyway, who cares? Because this whole scene, everything they're saying to each other, this is a breakup. Oh. Everything they say to each other sounds like a breakup. Especially when Will, he just lists all these things. I don't want to know where you are. I'm not going to find you. I'm not going to look for you. And unlike my dogs, and I'm going, no, where are the dogs? I'm not going to miss you. I don't even want to think about you anymore. And I was like, okay, all right, we get it. But, you know, what I did like about this scene, I mean, I liked all of this. I don't mind what they've done with the Will and Hannibal thing, because I always thought that was there, even in the original books, quite frankly. They just went maybe a little overboard with the TV show to a certain extent. But what I liked here is this isn't just Will saying goodbye. I thought finally Will is making a clear distinction between them. And so this whole business about the blurring of their selves and how they're almost the same person is kind of, now they're splitting apart again because of the lines that either of them would cross. So I like that, you know, this might be Will returning to the land of sanity finally. So Will, Hannibal, you know, he gets up, walks out. It was a little weird because when this was all happening was daylight. And then I'm going to guess at least an hour or two has gone by, unless maybe the sun was going down or something, because it's nighttime. And several vehicles pull up to Will's house. You know, they're flashing red and blue. And then we see it's the FBI. And they seem to be led by Jack Crawford. I was a little bit confused. I actually thought Jack Crawford had been forced out of the FBI. But did he only take time off to take care of his wife? Is that what had happened? And I just misunderstood that?
Yeah, that's what I think happened. But
okay. That's fine. I brought this up over the weekend with my friend, and they said that to me. I was like, oh, okay. Anyway, Will comes out to break the Jack that Hannibal is gone, but we find out seconds later, no, he's not. He's actually been chilling out around the side of the house, I guess maybe playing faraway charades with Chio, who's hiding in the bushes or something. So I was wondering, how long was he just hanging out there? You know? Or maybe he called the FBI himself. I don't know. Anyway, he comes out. His hands are raised. He kneels before Jack, and he tells him that, you know, you finally caught the Chesapeake Ripper. And Jack says, no, I didn't catch you. You surrendered. But the big unspoken question here is why? And as if it was kind of like a direct, you can't quit me kind of response to what Will said to him earlier, he says, he's kind of looking at Jack when he says this, I want you to know exactly where I am and where you can always find me. Huh. Which is a direct, like, zing, too bad, Will, you're stuck with him. And that's pretty much it. We see Hannibal is cuffed and led away, and then we see Chio walking off into the sparkly snow. And that was the end of the episode. And like I said, I really kind of enjoyed this one. I mean, it was very freaky, but it was fun, and it wasn't quite as self-indulgent as I think they have gotten with a few episodes this season. I think the only thing I missed in this episode was, you know, not having Bedelia in it, but I know she kind of made her goodbyes in the previous episode, so there would have been no reason to see her, but, you know, I kind of missed seeing her on the show, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if we'll see much of her again now. And it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm guessing that she's done on the show.
Yeah.
But who knows? But I don't see how they would add her. Actually, I shouldn't say I don't see it, but I doubt they're going to add her to the rest of the show, considering where Elektra is going to be. In fact, he's going to be under the charge of a different psychiatrist. Is it really a spoiler if I say, because they showed it in the ad, and anyone who's seen Red Dragon or read the books knows, you know, where he's going.
Right. Or, yeah, seen any movies or anything, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's finally going to be under the thumb of one Mr. Dr. Chilton. I believe, unless they really change the script on us here, but that is, I think, was the implication from the ad, which did excite me quite a bit.
I'm definitely looking forward to the next episode, even though I won't be able to watch it for a while. But.
Yeah, we should make clear that our next podcast is probably going to be delayed a bit due to your trip. You're going to be on vacation for a week. But, you know, again, the fact that the show has been pushed to Saturday, that might help us out a little bit. Who cares? Guys will just have to wait a couple extra days. No big deal. So back to the show. And now I want to address something that came up in conversation with a friend. My friend, it's my best friend, Adrian. So she's listening. Yay, Adrian. See you.
Yay. Woo.
She said something, because she's definitely gotten a lot more tired of the artsiness of the show this season. It has bothered her to the extent where she's kind of not quite as sorry as we are to see it go, quite frankly. What she said was that she missed the more killer of the week procedural element of the show that it had in the first two seasons. Especially in the first season, and still had to a certain extent in the second season. And my initial reaction to that was, as I often do with her and everyone, was one of disagreement. You know, because I like the idea that it's the show is not doesn't take a conventional path, whatever. But then I started thinking about it, and I realized when I've really loved this show, and I'm going to compare it to another network show that you know that I watch, but I always say this about that show, although it's about as different a show as you can get, the show The Good Wife. I really enjoy a show that finds a great way to balance the two, that can really do a great job of having a certain procedural element or case of the week kind of a thing while having a really much bigger deal, the overarching serialized nature. I mean, Person of Interest does that to a certain extent, actually. Sometimes they do it well, sometimes not so much. Hannibal, I thought, did a fantastic job of it during the first two seasons. And I think, again, I'm not saying I want a killer of the week, because especially since we're going to Red Dragon now, but I think the first seven episodes, since you had characters that were supposed to be pursuing Lecter, but they sort of kind of really weren't, there wasn't as strong a narrative drive to it, if that makes any sense.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it wasn't, the cat and mouse game was, there was a little bit of one between the inspector in Italy and Lecter, but that seemed to only really exist in one episode and really for only a couple scenes. I think that's my regret about this season. While it's gorgeous to look at and there are things I really liked, it felt like it just kind of drifted more than I would have liked in the first half. And I know that's supposed to be somehow resemble a dreamlike state, but you know, I would have given you one episode for that. I didn't need the whole half of the season to be like that. So again, I really like the show a lot. You know, it's definitely one of my favorites, but I'm borderline an apologist for the show at times, it feels like. But I'm hoping with this final six, and it may very well be the final six, that they've got a great story to work with, Red Dragon. I'm assuming we're going to see some of the characters that we're missing, like all the people that used to work in the lab. I'm kind of sorry not to see all those guys again, for the first half of the season. And we'll see where they go with that. I'm hoping it's going to be, you know, if it was a final six, I hope they're a great final six, you know?
Right. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to what's coming next. And I agree with Adrian, just like, you know, I've missed that, you know, the monster of the week. I mean, or, you know, it didn't tend to be every other, you know, week. Sometimes they just would blend from one episode to the other. But, you know, at least it was memorable and, you know, it just worked. But I definitely, you know, it's felt for the last few weeks that, you know, it's just, you know, they've just been kind of, you know, flying around, waiting to land, you know, time for this big thing that they got going the rest of the season. So I think once they, you know, they're kind of getting the pieces back in place, and even though Hannibal's locked up, you know, he'll still, you know, I guess he'll probably be in some kind of advisory role. And assuming they have it be like the book, you know, I suppose, you know, he'll be having, you know, some kind of role, you know, behind the scenes that they don't know about right away. But I suspect highly that, you know, they'll, you know, just like, you know, oh, it's only going to be six episodes, but I mean, that's, you know, the length of, you know, two or three movies. So they definitely have enough time since they know what they're doing, as long as they don't, you know, waste their time with a bunch of really crazy, you know, snail imagery. I think,
all right, enough of the snails.
I think we should be, yeah, that's what the season 3 DVD cover is going to look like. It's just going to be a snail with, like, antlers instead of antenna.
No. It's gonna have a special, exclusive keepsake case that's in the shape of a snail. You know what I call it? Instead of a clamshell, it's gonna be called a snail shell.
And it just scoots along your entertainment center, just dropping discs out.
Yeah, and it takes forever to load. All right. Well, I think that's pretty much all we got for this one.
Good episode. Maybe the best of the season so far.
Definitely the most fun one, I think.
Yeah.
To a certain extent. Again, I knew they were going to kill him off, but I am sorry to see Mason Verger go. What I'm hoping is that, especially with his weirdness with his mouth and his teeth, that Richard Armitage, who is going to play Francis Dolaride in the next six episodes, I'm hoping he has an interesting voice that I can do a really bad impression of as well. Wait, actually, my impression isn't that bad. Anyway, so if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to join the conversation about Hannibal and other TV shows of that ilk, you can find us on Facebook, the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. Very easy enough to find. Just type in Serious TV Drama. That should be enough to find our page. Join it and join all the fun conversations and shenanigans that go on that page. You can also track us down on iTunes. Again, type in Serious TV Drama. That should be enough to find us there. You can subscribe to us. If you enjoy these podcasts, feel free to rate and review us as well. It's always appreciated. Even if you don't like us, lie and make it like it's your charitable donation for the year or something. I don't know. And that's it. We will be putting out another geeky podcast later this week. You know, to make up for Dan being away on vacation. And then after that, we will be doing our next Hannibal podcast, probably not for like at least another week and a half. But, you know,
you guys get there. Yeah. You'll survive. Be happy. We're not making you pay for it, so stop complaining.
Right. So
I'm kidding. It's fine.
I know. So I guess we should get to the point of closing up this podcast. I don't know if we want to talk about any of the various delicacies that were mentioned in this episode.
I'm just wondering if they cooked that baby up, if it would taste like bacon, but that's pretty much all I got.
I would have thought you would have went with the overcooked penis.
Nope.
Because that would have put me in a bad spot to say what I normally have to say at the end of these podcasts, which is, of course, you know, that sounds delicious.